Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
If you call, I will answer. If you follow, I'll pick you up.
We always like to take a little time, as often as we have the time, to respond to our listeners, especially those that are leaving their questions, their comments, their criticism, their show suggestions, whatever they have to say. It's of value to listen to on the Issues Etc. comment line. This is a line that we keep open 24 hours a day, all year round for our listeners, especially for our on-demand listeners. Since you're listening on demand, you can't in real time interact with the show. We give you a chance to interact with the show in, what shall we call, comment line time and respond to it. The number, by the way, 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. Again, for anybody who has a question or a comment for the show, anytime you want to use that. Let's lead off with a question about Jesus being king on the cross.
This is Paul in Milwaukee, Wednesday morning quarterback, with two disparate observations on the sermon of November 27th, reviewed on Issues Etc. Number one, no analogy is perfect. I, for one, am wrestling with Jesus as king on the cross. Perhaps Issues Etc. can help. Jesus was called king, but then didn't act as king there. One remembers the soldiers' mocking designation of Jesus as king before the crucifixion, and the call of the Jews and of the thieves to Jesus to exercise his power on the cross, and the statement in the past tense of the soldier about Jesus' godness. Jesus did promise the thief a kingdom. St. Paul, Philippians 2:8, and Lutherans called Jesus on the cross as being in a state of humiliation that leads to but is not the state of the exalted king of the resurrection and judgment. Is Jesus a king on the cross, or is the raising up on the cross a time of rejection by men and abandonment by the Father and in God's economy means to real kingship later? Number two, is there training in the seminary as to when to end the running commentary of the babbling youth on a sermon as it is attempted of delivery? I, in ignorance, think not, having seen pastors interrupt sermons to say, "Get out, please," to the toughing out of 300 people to the sermon end. Ironically, many in Vienna, Virginia, spend Monday to Friday writing enforceable regulations governing the behavior of men. Thanks for listening.
All right, two issues. Now, he's talking about a sermon review that we did recently of a First Sunday in Advent sermon that was preached by a pastor in Vienna, Virginia. That's the reference to Vienna, Virginia. I think it's Athanasius Lutheran Church there. Dame James Douthwaite is the pastor. We reviewed his sermon very favorably, by the way. How shall I put this? It's not an analogy. The fact that Jesus reigns from the throne of the cross is not an analogy. All the gospel writers in their telling of the passion and crucifixion story are screaming at us that that's precisely what Jesus is doing. He is ascending the cross to begin his rightful reign as King and Savior of the universe. This is his coronation. They're screaming it to us. They're screaming it to us in an ironic fashion through the mocking of the people at the cross, if you really are a king, through the unwitting posting of Pilate over his head, the king of the Jews, through the mocking that he gets during his trial when he's, you know, it wasn't standard operating procedure to crown people with thorns at a crucifixion or to robe them as king. The whole issue of his trial is Jesus king, yes or no? And the answer that's being screamed to us in the Passion accounts is yes, at the cross. Now you say, he doesn't look like a king. He doesn't act like a king. He doesn't do things that kings do. That's the point. Jesus reigns from the cross like no king ever, like no king ever could. He reigns through, precisely through, suffering, rejection, bleeding, dying. That's how Jesus is king for us. He never ceases to be king. He's king from all eternity. He's king when he arrives. The kingdom of heaven is here. When he says to the thief on the cross, notice he doesn't say, tomorrow you'll be with me in paradise, or when I ascend, you'll be with me in paradise. No, when he says, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom, Jesus says, today. Today. Not tomorrow, not a couple weeks off, not when I come again in glory, but today you will have what you ask for, this kingdom, because he is king. And I think that's crucial to understand. It's not an analogy that Jesus is reigning from the cross. It's not a figure of speech. It is a perfectly good, perfectly sound theological description of how Jesus is king then and now. And as for the babbling youth, let the babies babble. If they can't babble in church, where else could they? We'll be right back. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Gloria Christi Lutheran, Greeley, Colorado; St. John's Lutheran, Rosemount, Minnesota; Trinity Lutheran, Waltham, Minnesota; Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri; Zion Lutheran, Gravelton, Missouri; Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana; Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee; and Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Bethany Saros had just been deployed to Iraq when she found out she was pregnant. According to her, the military has an unspoken code when it comes to pregnant soldiers. Get an abortion and continue the mission. I don't know if this was true, but I'm sure there was some pressure to abort her baby. Bethany said there's an implicit assumption by some fellow soldiers a woman is just trying to get out of deployment if she gets pregnant and doesn't abort, because they're automatically sent back to the U.S. Even so, Bethany couldn't take the life of her unborn baby. She said someday her son would ask questions and she wanted to have the right answers. I believe abstinence is best, but I admire Bethany for bucking pressure and choosing life for her baby.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 30th of November. In a few minutes, Dr. Andrew Steinman's going to join us to talk about thankfulness in the Scripture. Before we bring him on, here's another comment from the Issues Etc. comment line about the, well, it's called the dispute resolution process in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
This is Michael O'Connor from Indian Hill, Maryland. I'm listening to your November 5th open lines show, and you're talking about the dispute resolution, whatever, and you mentioned that it discourages people from raising questions of pastors teaching false doctrine. You talked about it discourages pastors, all the people, and you mentioned lay people. I would think that lay people have a little bit more freedom in this regard because, first of all, technically I think the dispute resolution system is for members of Synod, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's my understanding that pastors, congregations, and commission ministers are the only ones who are members of Synod, while normal lay people are members of churches that are members of the Synod. So technically, lay people are not technical members of the Synod, so we are not technically bound by the dispute resolution thing. Secondly, if you have a pastor that initially teaching false doctrine. Let's hope we don't get many of those, but let's say there's one. Wouldn't the congregation have a power over them in that, not nothing, kick them out frivolously? That's not a good idea because that gives too much power to them. But if there's a pastor who's initially teaching false doctrine, hopefully you'd have another synodical church around that would not have such a pastor. And if enough people went from a false teaching pastor to a true teaching pastor, maybe that might be enough to kick the false teaching pastor in the butt, per se, as the expression goes, that what he's teaching is incorrect, or at least make him examine what he's teaching. Just my thoughts.
Well, okay, a couple things. You're quite right that as far as membership official membership in the Synod goes, officially defined, that is something that is only accessible to pastors and to congregations. Those are the only members, capital M members of Synod, that there are. Everyone else is a member of a congregation that is a member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I do not know, actually, how the layperson fits into the dispute resolution process, so I don't know how that would be. Now, as to your hypothetical that, well, there'd be a pastor teaching false doctrine, if enough people left the congregation, he might get the message, assumes that the people actually know he's teaching false doctrine, that they can tell the difference between true doctrine and false doctrine. This is one of the long-term dangers of false teaching. It has a tendency, and boy, has it proven true, has a tendency to blind people, largely through ignorance, to dumb down the congregation to the point where they can't tell the difference between truth and falsehood. They just can't. They lose the ability after about, I would say about a year. If they listen to it, they lose the ability to discern truth from error in any subtle way, sometimes even in any gross way. Do they lose the ability to discern truth from error? Which is why, picking up on the second thing you had to say, which is why very often the churches that teach falsely or dumb down the congregation systematically, sometimes I think intentionally, over years and decades, tend to grow. It's a sad truth. And then they claim that they must be doing something right because they're growing, which is only compounding the error even more. So you can't assume that the average parishioner in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod even has the... I'm not saying they're stupid. I'm saying the church, the congregations, the pastors have either wittingly or unwittingly failed to equip them to let the sheep judge their shepherds as they ought to. In an ideal world, the sheep would be able to judge their shepherds. But in the real world that is the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we have allowed our congregations, our lay people, we have robbed them of sound theology and doctrine, and we've allowed them to be dumbed down to the point where they can't tell the difference. And the sad thing is, many congregations can't tell the difference either. By the way, the Issues Etc. comment line is always open for anything you want to say, criticism, question, show suggestion, 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384.